You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams, like that dude just said, yes, indeed, this show is solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, we're live right now in the studio with Lou Burdette. Lou is running for the governor for the state of Alabama. He is probably, in my opinion, one of the top candidates that could possibly take this, you know, opportunity and dethrone Kay Ivey. Lou, my recollection is you were the COO of Books A Million. Is that right?
COO of Books A Million. I tell everybody I learned more in 13 years at Books A Million than I could have learned 30 anywhere else. It was such a great experience.
Well, it started off as an Alabama company and grew it to several thousand employees and stores all over the place, right?
Gosh, we started off, well, when I started in 1985, it wasn't even called Books A Million. It was called Bookland because we were small.
Bookland.
Yeah. You know, like you saw in the malls with Walden's and Dalton's. There were no superstores really. Yeah. We opened our first one in Huntsville, where I was earlier today. And in 1987, we were off to the races, and it was high growth, very intense, and a lot of fun.
I think Bookland was in Parkway City Mall in Huntsville when I used to work
exactly
there.
Right.
Yeah, I went there many times.
So the Anderson family started it in Florence, Alabama, where I lived at the time. We moved our corporate headquarters to Birmingham, and it was a great experience working my way up to be chief operating officer. We had 250 employees when I started. When I left, we had over 3,000.
Wow. Okay, so you know what it means to run an organization, and you've seen an organization come from small and to start from scratch and mom and pop to grow into the big times.
Yeah.
But then you also left there after, 13 years, I think you
13
said?
13 years.
And went to King's Home, right?
King's Home. King's Ranch and Hannah Home, as some across central Alabama know it.
Yeah. And that's been a career too, which really has a passion calling attached to it.
It does. It's been the honor of a lifetime to serve youth and moms and kids coming out of really horrible abuse, seeing such devastating circumstances of abuse and poverty and homelessness and neglect, and see them find hope and opportunity in life and be able to start over. And you know, those are Alabama values that we want to help those that can't help themselves and need a hand up at a time in life. There's not any of us that haven't needed help along the way, right, in life. Mm-hmm. We've all needed that. And so it's just been great to be a part of King's Home team and running that organization for the last 19 years. And now I'm on a new journey.
And so you went to school here in Alabama, grew up in Florence area, or where'd you grow up?
I grew up in East Alabama next to Auburn, but I went to the University of Alabama. I loved my 4 years there, and I was on campus at A-Day last week, Saturday, handing out all my material, and I was at Auburn A-Day the week before that. So, but I grew up in Roanoke, little East Alabama town.
Yeah,
next to Roanoke. But I did live in Florence for 4 years. Love that area too. I have two sisters that live there. So I'm heavily oriented toward North Alabama, it seems. My brother lives in Hartsville, and then right. We live in Birmingham.
So you didn't go off to big New York City and try to bring back their values to Alabama. You did it all right here in state.
I've lived here my whole life.
All right, native son. So, all right, that being said, I do recall, too, and you said it on the show once before, but it's such a compelling story, and I believe it was when you were growing up in Roanoke. You had a pretty awful experience, a galvanizing experience sort of shaped who you are in some ways.
You know, when we have struggles or challenges in life, we learn the most, right? And that was certainly the case for me. I was 15 years old, kidnapped at gunpoint, forced in a car. Two guys took me out in the middle of nowhere, cracked my head open, huge gash. Then they began to stab me. They stabbed me four times. And then they started dragging me. And Phil, I was like, we're in the middle of nowhere. Where could they be dragging me to? And then all of a sudden I'm falling. And I thought, well, they've dumped me over some kind of ledge or something. But I keep falling. And they had dumped me in an old water well.
Wow.
And I splash, hit the bottom. And it was 30 feet under the ground. And then they tried to bury me alive. They started dropping big boulders on top of me to cover me up. That's what they testified to in the trial. These huge chunks. It was like a sledgehammer just hammering the back of my head and back, these huge chunks dropping down on top of me. They were shining a flashlight on me. And then they began to shoot, and the fourth shot, the first three shots missed, and it was like a horrible game of Russian roulette because you know eventually one's going to hit you, right? And they shot me at the base of my skull and the back of my head, and the bullet rattled around, hit my jawbone, and lodged. It's still in my chin today.
No kidding.
And that's some interesting dental conversations along the way when they take an x-ray and they say, Mr. Burdett, do you know that? But you know, God's got a plan for all of that. We all face adversity. We all face huge challenges. And one of the biggest life lessons I learned from this was, you know, you never give up and that with God, all things are possible.
Well, I got to ask you, because the audience is probably dying to know right now, too. How'd you get out of the well?
God's strength. There's no way other Phil to explain
you
it.
You climbed out of the well?
Climbed out of the well. And had no idea. I was in the bottom of the well for two hours. And you know, I was scratching, I was clawing, I was pushing, I was pulling. And that's why 2 Corinthians 12:9 means so much to me. I'm not preaching. I'm just saying that when, you know, when we're the weakest, He truly is the strongest. There's no physical way you can explain me getting out of that well.
No.
There's no physical way you can explain me crawling another 2 hours back up, a mile back up this dirt road, literally in the middle of nowhere, to try to get help. The ambulance, this place was so remote, the ambulance couldn't even find me for another 2 hours to get to the emergency room. It was just the craziest thing. But, you know, I, looking back on it all these years later, seeing how God was in the middle of all of that, and truly, with Him, all things are possible. And it's made me a fighter in a good way.
Yeah.
You know, that I'm not going to give up. I'm going to have determination. I'm going to have perseverance to move this state forward. And I'm excited about that.
Well, I can hear that in your testimony, definitely. Tell the audience, what is it about your time with Books A Million and working also at King's Home that you think prepared you to be a governor? Because like you told me off air, you've never run for office before. This is your foray into politics. You're an outsider coming in.
Right.
What qualifies you, based on your experiences, to now run for the highest office, executive office in the state of Alabama?
It's interesting. Some people in this race call themselves political outsiders, but they're really not. They run before. You know, they've had other political appointments. My name's never been on a ballot. I've never run for anything, never dreamed really that I would. And then this is the journey I'm on right now, and I'm loving every minute of it because we have great people. We have a great state. And what prepared me to run for governor really started in my dad's grocery store, small-town grocery store. He owned an independent store in Roanoke, where I was kidnapped behind his store that night when I was leaving work. I was sacking groceries from the earliest age I can remember, learned a strong work ethic. And I know that helped me be successful at Books A Million, learning common sense business principles at the feet of my dad, watching him run a small business. And that's why I'm such a staunch defender of small business. But that did help me be successful at Books A Million. And you know what? Running this state is big business, isn't it?
Oh,
and
yeah.
I've run big business.
You know,
Books A Million grew from $26 million to over $250 million when I was there. And as chief operating officer, that was my responsibility. And so I know how to manage a big team. I know how to manage a multi-million-dollar budget. I know how to run big business. And I know how to grow jobs like we did at Books A Million that I mentioned earlier. And that's such valuable experience.
Okay. So anything you just described could have gone into being any other office to some degree. Why governor? I mean, what brought you to that position? Because some would say, well, all right, if you look at it on paper, Kay Ivey sort of worked her way up to governor. She's been in politics now for like 40 years.
I mean, 44 years.
Yeah, there you go. She was state treasurer. She was lieutenant governor, and she took over as governor. So why governor for you?
Right, because I so dearly love this state. It's an easy answer for me because I so dearly love this state. And our whole lifetime, where have we been? We've been at the bottom. Why are we at the bottom? Because lifetime politicians hold us back, hold us down, because they never get anything done. It's just always the status quo. Oh, I can't make this group mad over here. Oh, I owe that individual over there. You know, and everybody says, well, Lou, that's just the way it's always been in Alabama. It's not ever going to be any different. And Phil, you fought this battle too. And, you know, we can work for change. We see it happening all around us. Look at what Ron DeSantis has done in Florida. And you mentioned that earlier, and how he's such an innovator, how he's a bold leader, how he has a courage to take a bold stand. Do we ever see that in Alabama? And I truly believe it's got to be a political outsider that doesn't owe favors. Nobody's got influence over me to go to Montgomery, shake it upside down, roll up my sleeves, and work for change and to work to make things better, like I have a proven track record of doing everywhere I've ever worked before. And I've had a real job in the real world my whole career.
Well, I tell you what, let's do this. That's a perfect place to segue into a commercial, all right? We're going to be with you for a few more minutes here. We got plenty of time to talk. But, folks, let's go ahead and move to a commercial. You're listening to Lou Burdette. Who's got an extremely compelling personal story, who's got a background in business, who, by the way, has also got a heart for people based on his time with King's Home. And I'm going to tell you right now, he's also apparently got a passion for running for governor, because I'm sitting here in the studio catching some of that energy. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time, I like to say. So we're back in the studio right now, the studio. Like I said earlier, both of us are overdressed for radio, but I'm here with Lou Burdette, running for governor. Lou, I want to talk about things you're seeing or not seeing in Montgomery. And let me ask you this, and I hope I didn't not prep you for this question, but Kay Ivey is running for re-election. She's been in office, you said it, for like 44 years. And she's been down there in some form of public service for 44 years. She has drawn an incredibly large field of primary opponents. I don't know that I have ever seen an incumbent governor draw that many primary opponents. Why do you think that is?
And she keeps falling, right? I mean, some reports had her last summer as a 80th percentile favorability, and it seems like the polls are showing now that that's fallen well below 50. And how much further can she fall? And Phil, I see some interest in other candidates out in the state, and I know she's got 100% name recognition. I know she's the incumbent, so that means a lot, but I truly believe there's going to be a runoff. I believe I'm going to be in the runoff with her, and the stark contrast between the two of us in the runoff, I think, will be extremely evident at that point in June when we're head-to-head. But it's the question in my mind is, how much further can she really fall? Because she's not anywhere. You know, she didn't debate Tommy Battle, and that wasn't right, in my opinion.
Yeah.
She never campaigned on increasing our gas taxes 56%. That wasn't right. If you're going to increase gas taxes, then you need to campaign on it, and you need to debate on it. Alabamians deserve to know. And she's not campaigning this time. She makes cameo appearances here or there for 5 minutes, and you know, she's not going to debate. We have a debate coming up next Tuesday in Huntsville, and she won't be there. And she hasn't been to a single gubernatorial forum where we're there sharing ideas, talking about our values. And don't real leaders want to be out front so that Alabamians can know what they stand for, know what they can expect from their leadership, talking about what's important to them? That's what the other candidates in this race are doing.
Well, and I agree with you. I think that if you're proud of your time and service, you should get out there and do something about it, and be willing to walk among the people and share with them your victory lap, so to speak. But right now she's running, but it doesn't feel like a victory lap.
Doesn't feel like a victory lap, does it?
No, it doesn't. Now, you mentioned cameo appearances because, and I'll throw this out there, she kind of got caught off guard in one of those cameo appearances. Brandon Mosley, one of the
Didn't she?
Yeah. So last week, I think it was, last week. Brandon Mosley, a reporter for 1819 News, with whom I'm affiliated, Brandon Mosley's at an event where she's basically getting endorsed by the NRA or something like that.
Yep.
And she's there just to receive, and then apparently her press corps or whoever.
It was a softball question.
Yeah. Hey, Governor, what are you most disappointed with? And she up and says she's disappointed that legislation for gambling didn't pass.
I was astounded. Not only astounded, but disappointed that her biggest disappointment was that gambling legislation wasn't passed in the last session. How in the world can education not be the number one issue every legislative session, not this year and not next year, but until we get it right and move up out of the bottom? How in the world can she not address being in the bottom of education, and yet what is her biggest disappointment is that we didn't pass gambling in Alabama, which I'm 100% opposed to expanding casino gambling in Alabama.
Yeah, exactly. Not just gambling like a lottery. We're talking about expansion of casino gaming that would have given the bad actors who've been breaking our law for years a monopoly under state law to build more casinos. We'd have had a casino every 75 to 100 miles based on the plan.
Yeah, and just follow the money. Why is that, Phil? I mean, you know this better than anybody. Just follow the money. You know, gambling industry is pouring millions to keep it the top priority. You know, so what was she doing? Throwing them a bone that says, hey, next time I got you back. I mean, that sent a pretty clear signal to me that it's not going away. You know, it fails every time. How many times statewide are we going to vote gambling down in Alabama? Yet it continues to be the top priority, and yet we continue, and I just get so fired up about this, because we continue to stay at the bottom in education. How in the world is that not the number one priority in our state?
It's absolutely mind-boggling, and I know we're about to go to a break. I mean, these segments fly when we're sitting
here
talking.
They do, don't they?
But when we come back from this, I'll tell you what, let's do. When we come back from this break, why don't we talk about education? Because you're preaching my song at that point. Preaching my song? Singing my song, preaching my sermon. All said and done, you're speaking something that I have a passion for, and that's getting us out of 50th in the nation. We're last. We're dead last. Mississippi's doing better than us now.
Can't say thank God for Mississippi
can't
anymore.
Can't say it. All right, folks, music's playing. That means we're going to a break. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, here in the studio with Lou Burdette, candidate for governor. You can hear his views. We're going to talk more about it when we get back. Y'all stay tuned. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Time now, 4:35 PM. Some of you guys are in go-home mode already, and I know it. You got the car keys in your hand. You're thinking about what you're going to do on the way home, maybe whether you're going to stop and get something to eat. Before I get back here with Lou Burdette, let me just remind you guys about Just Love Coffee Cafe. Listen, one of the things I love about Just Love Coffee Cafe is they are not only a great place to get epic coffee. Like, if you want a good cup of hot, black, freshly ground coffee, go there. If you want a cappuccino, a mocha, a latte, whatever, go there. They also have great food, wraps and sandwiches and salads and soups and wow. Anyway, but what I love about them too is their attitude of giving. They are an organization that is committed to the community, and Just Love Coffee Cafe has a belief that their job is not just to be good at food and service. Their job is also to give back to the community. You'll constantly see fundraisers. You'll constantly see charitable undertakings. And I've enjoyed my partnership with them. So Just Love Coffee Cafe, two locations, one on Hughes Road in Madison and the other on South Memorial Parkway in Huntsville. You check them out, and you might want to stop and get a bite to eat on the way home. All right, back here in the studio, we're with Lou Burdette. Lou, you could witness, by the way, I didn't use notes just then. I just talked from the heart, didn't I?
Straight from the heart. That's the way I like it.
All right, speaking of straight from the heart, you were getting fired up before we went to break and even got fired up while we were talking in here together. There's several things that I know are on your agenda, one of which is education.
It is. Got to be number one.
Talk about it.
It's just got to be number one, and that's what just so fires me up when the governor talks about her biggest disappointment was gambling, when education's got to be the number one issue that we address till we get it right. And it's really not that complicated, is it? Because we just saw what happened in Florida with Ron DeSantis, and what a great template, and why reinvent the wheel? What did he do? You know, he took out Common Core. They were ranked 26 in education. He said, we're going to take out Common Core. You know, we're going to beef up school choice, have real school choice, and we're going to improve education. And there's a lot more issues. It's not that simple because even the school choice issue, it doesn't work everywhere. Like where I grew up, your parents can't drive to the next county over for school choice. So it doesn't work everywhere, but it certainly works for some urban areas. And parents then have real choice, and along with that choice have a strict child's savings, educational account, whatever you want to call it. I don't really like to call it a voucher because that gets some negative connotations. But have a fund that only goes to the child, not to the parents. Don't junk it up. Make it a simple bill for school choice to include private schools, Christian schools, parochial schools, even homeschool. We've got 12% of Alabamians that homeschool. So why shouldn't those parents have choices on where they can send their kids? And we know we have overcrowded classrooms right now, so wouldn't that be a win-win for public education? What if the classroom size in public education went from sometimes over 30 down to 25 or 20, and some kids had a choice to go somewhere else? Wouldn't that be a win for the public education and have some healthy competition?
I think, and you said competition, I was about to say, I've said very often that sometimes what school choice does is it brings free market principles from the business world into education. And that competition, I mean, you rise to the level of your competition, hopefully.
That's right.
And so if
helps
you got
everybody get better.
Yeah, if you got a school down the road that's doing a better job, parents want to flock to it, it makes you have to up your game to keep those kids there.
That's right.
All right, well, education is a huge component of where we are, but let's talk about some other things before we run out of time. Things we saw or didn't see out of Montgomery this year. One of the things we didn't see was really meaningful tax breaks. I mean, we saw tax increases. We saw lots of big spending. There were some tax cuts. They did some things with the business privilege tax, but I think most
pennies.
Alabamians are going to say
was pennies.
Exactly. Most Alabamians are going to say that doesn't help me.
Yeah, it was pennies, and that was the right thing to do. I'm not knocking that.
Sure.
But it shouldn't have been a 50% cut. It should have been a 100% cut because
sure.
It's a small business privilege tax of $110, and small businesses don't need to pay $110 for the privilege of having their small business.
Can I please be in business? Thank you so much. May I have another?
Call it something else. What an insult to small business, you know. I get really wound up on taxes because it was completely wrong for the governor in 2019. The first thing she did was increase our gas taxes 56%.
Yeah.
Never debated, never campaigned on it, and it was just wrong. And so all of us want better roads and bridges, right? But why don't we have solutions for less government to pay for roads and bridges? Republicans have the supermajority in Montgomery, and when do we ever have less taxes and less government solutions in Montgomery? But when we find ourselves in a ditch and our roads and bridges aren't where we want them to be, and we haven't planned right and we haven't prepared correctly for decades, then all of a sudden our only solution is to raise gas taxes 56%, and I find that so wrong.
Yeah, in fact, if you look at it right now, the pain at the pump that people are experiencing, 10 cents on the gallon right now, comes from that new gas tax.
So why hadn't we already put a moratorium on it, Bill?
That's a great question, since Georgia did it just to our east.
Exactly.
And I think what I heard recently from one of my former peers, he's a friend. I mean, I like Clyde Chambliss. He's a senator. But he literally came out recently and said, that would be bad government to freeze that gas tax. And I'm thinking, bad government to stop?
To help Alabamians?
Yeah, really.
Help Alabamians? And let's find another way to fund roads and bridges that we all want. But, you know, and then one other thing that really fires me up is to see all those rebuild Alabama signs all over everywhere. That's nothing more than a taxpayer-paid PR campaign for the current governor. And why are we rebuilding Alabama? If we had been planning the right way, if we'd been budgeting the right way, if we had vision and leadership in Montgomery, we wouldn't need to be rebuilding Alabama, would we?
Well, and so to your point, one of the things that the Policy Institute pointed out back when that gas tax was underway, when they were still in the legislative floor trying to get it passed, was that the existing gas tax, because there's been one for a long time,
right,
since the early 90s, But they were telling everybody, we don't have enough to do what we need to do for our roads and bridges. We don't have enough. And yet what they were also doing was taking $64 million a year out of the existing gas tax to pay for things that had nothing to do with roads and bridges.
Right.
And they wouldn't modify that.
And what about, you know, what about what we did with COVID money? We had $770 million there. We have another $1.2 billion coming in June. We got a surplus in our general fund of $1.5 billion to $2 billion. So why aren't we using some of that money to at least put a moratorium on the gas tax? Why aren't we using some of that money even to roll back the grocery tax? We're one of 13 states that still has a grocery tax. That would help all Alabamians if we roll back the grocery 4% grocery tax.
Even the poorest among our citizens have to buy gas for their car and milk and bread for the house.
It'd help all Alabamians.
All right. Well, okay.
So to me, that's just common sense ways to help all Alabamians, and that's why I say I'm a common sense business leader that wants to work for those kind of changes in Montgomery.
All right. Well, so far you're passing the Right Side Radio tests. Okay, so that's good. Let's talk about a few other things that are out there right now. We got fiscal policy. You just talked about wanting to give some back, but there's also been within fiscal policy. There's been, I would say, a growth of government. You just kind of mentioned it a moment ago.
$3 billion in the last, 4 years?
Yeah.
30% increase in our budget. We're spending money like crazy every direction we go.
And we're spending it on government.
On government.
We got huge. We had Justin Bogie from the Policy Institute. You know Justin. We had Justin Bogie on from the Policy Institute earlier in the show today talking about how much has come into the state with COVID relief funds,
right.
CARES Act and the rescue plan. Billions of dollars. They still don't. They're having to have a third session this year.
That's right.
Just to
this
figure
summer.
Out how to spend another $1 billion.
This summer.
That being said, so far, the vast majority, I would say somewhere in the neighborhood of like 98% of that, has been spent just on government items. Nothing back to the people.
Nothing. And it's supposed to be COVID relief money, right? So those are ways that I see where we could have helped all Alabamians put a moratorium on the gas tax or roll it back, you know, but roll back the grocery tax. That would have helped every single Alabamian. You know, those are the kinds of things that we could be doing with that money. But when is it ever up for debate? You know, we get a little passes at a bill here or there that never makes it out of committee, and we have the supermajority. Why aren't these things passing a supermajority of Republicans when we're supposed to stand for less taxes and less government?
I think it boils down to leadership.
100%.
I think leadership matters, and I think that the branches of government need to have their bright lines. There need to be legislative issues handled by the legislature, executive issues handled by the executive, but I think that one can call upon the other to do something, and right now all I see is a bunch of waffling around down in Montgomery, and I can't tell who's in charge.
Isn't the governor supposed to set the agenda? Isn't the governor supposed to set the tone? Isn't the governor supposed to provide bold leadership in Montgomery? And when do we ever see that? Because our governor seems to be holding her finger in the air and saying, oh, you know, we can't make this group mad. Oh, these folks over here, we can't make them mad. And that's why I'm standing, to restore trust in Montgomery. You know, we're the fourth most politically corrupt state in America. That's heartbreaking. Who wants to be in the same category with New York on anything? We have unlimited campaign contributions. We're one of only five states, Phil. You know this. We're one of five states that allows unlimited campaign contributions. So follow the money. And from day one in this race, I said, we're not going to take a campaign contribution more than $10,000. And that's still a lot of money. How much is enough? And Kay Ivey has taken over $7 million in donations since 2017, over $10,000. And last month, she took one for $750,000 from a D.C. PAC. You know, what is a D.C. PAC? What kind of influence do they have in Montgomery to be giving the governor $750,000? I'm just asking the question. You know, and another candidate in this race has received $1 million donation from an LLC nobody's ever heard of. You know, to me, that Alabamians are ready to do things the right way. I'm a fighter to do what's right.
All right. Well, Lou, we're running out of time, but let me ask you this. I'm a firm believer that it can't just be the candidates calling. It's got to be the families calling. So Real quick, the family in on this with you?
Oh, 100%. My wife's setting up for a meet and greet right now. She travels with me. We were in Huntsville earlier at a Republican Women's Group of Madison. She's with me as much as she can. She'll be a great first lady. She's a healthcare professional and expert, really, in her field. And she'll be a great first lady. She's smart. She's spirited. She's passionate. And three wonderful kids. We all feel like we're blessed with the best family in the world, right?
I know I am.
Exactly.
Well, Lou Burdette, candidate for governor. We appreciate your time here on Right
Check Side. Check me out, louin22.com. Follow me on social media, Phil. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Right here in the studio, folks. All right. Well, Copper, move us to the last break of the day. We'll come back and wrap up just for a few moments. Lou's headed off to a campaign event, but Lou, thanks again for being here in the studio.
Thank you so much, Phil.
Absolutely. News Talk 770 AM 92.5 FM WVNN Phil Williams Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Say, listen, you know, I am determined that this show is going to do all that it takes to educate and enlighten and entertain and empower you to know your way around politics. Some of you guys could do this show for me. I mean, I've got some people in this audience that are so solid, so adept. And then others of you are like still figuring it out, and you're trying to grab hold of what you can, what nuggets, and sort of educate yourself. And listen, whatever realm of that you find yourself in, I want the show to make sure it is there to provide you every single aspect of that. So that interview we just had right there with Lou Burdette, that was solid. You guys literally... You got a decision to make pretty soon. Hey, Copper, grab the mic a second.
Yes.
It's funny because your monologue earlier talked about, you started off by saying you don't yet know who you like for governor, and I'm not asking you to endorse or anything, but so you've heard that interview. What'd you think of Lou Burdette's interview?
I'm impressed. He seems like a very solid fellow, and just reading his bio before on his website, he was definitely among my top choices. And I think I'm leaning more and more towards him each time I hear him speak.
Oh, no kidding. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, that's cool. And by the way, he was as engaging in the studio as his voice probably sounded like on the microphone to those who are listening. And and we've had Tim James. He was on, was it last week? When did we have Tim James on? Last week?
A couple weeks ago.
Okay. What are your thoughts on when Tim James was here?
Well, I don't remember him as much, so I guess he wasn't as memorable to me.
Okay. All right. Woo. Okay. Copper doesn't remember.
I mean, he sounded a little bit more like an old Alabama boy kind of candidate.
Okay. Okay. Well, he is an old Alabama boy.
Right. Exactly. So maybe not as fresh as, I mean, I like Lindy Blanchard, but she doesn't seem as solid as some of the other candidates.
When we say solid, what do you mean? Like on the issues or in terms of her presentation? What are you saying?
Yeah, in terms of presentation, I don't know. She doesn't seem quite as confident as I would hope a leader of the entire state would be.
Okay, interesting. All right, who else have we had on? I think those three are the only two, those three we've had on in the governor's race. Probably need to get Dean Odle in here at some point. Mm-hmm. And then there's some also-rans that I don't think are ever going to have a chance in this race. Mm-hmm. But I would say those three that we've had on the show, if anybody can topple the Ivy machine, it's going to be them. It's going to be one of them.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing, by the way, I'm hearing that the Ivy camp is preparing itself for a runoff. Mm. So who knows? But yeah, folks, that's the deal. So come May 24th. Gosh, count the days. Am I right, Copper? Like 39 days?
Oh wow, that's pretty close.
It's pretty close. So we're inside of the striking distance right now. And all it takes is for her not to have 50%, and then whoever's in second place is immediately in the runoff with her. And then you got to look at it and go, okay, let's say in the last poll we saw Ivy had, I want to say, 42%, 44%, somewhere in there. And then, you know, the others were in the teens. The three that we've interviewed, I think, were somewhere in the teens. But then there was 22% undecided. And then the others, like Dean Odle and Dean Young and some others, they have 1% and 2% each. So there's a whole lot of percentage out there that could swing to a non-Ivy candidate if they can get to a runoff. That's interesting. All right, folks, we're down to the end. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. We'll be back here tomorrow, too. Copper and I both have got a great day planned for you then, too. Coming up next, you got the great one, Mark Levin.